The reading this morning is the whole of chapter 53 of Isaiah, which is page 740 in your Bibles if you want to follow it. And on the screen. Who has believed our message, and to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He grew up before him like a tender shoot and like a root out of dry ground. He had no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. Nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows, familiar with suffering. Like one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows, and yet we considered him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions, he was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed. And we all, like sheep, have gone astray, and each of us turned to his own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and afflicted, and yet did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before her shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away, and who can speak of his descendants? For he was cut off from the land of the living. For the transgression of my people he was stricken. He was assigned a grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death, although he had done no violence, nor was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it was the Lord's will to crush him and cause him to suffer. And though the Lord makes his life a guilt offering, he will see his offspring and prolong his days, and the will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. After the suffering of his soul, he will see the light of life and be satisfied. By his knowledge, my righteous servant will justify many, and he will bear their iniquities. Therefore, I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he poured out his life unto death, and was numbered with the transgressors. For he bore the sin of many, and made intercession for the transgressors. Amen.
So we're continuing our short series, Getting a Handle on the Messiah, which is taking us through the period of Advent. Advent is traditionally a period of waiting and preparation, and as we look at the promises and prophecies that God had given to the people of Israel, even though they had to wait for their fulfillment, we too can find our hope and faith strengthened as we see how he fulfilled these in Jesus. So we can learn from the waiting of Israel and see that our waiting is on a solid foundation. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen who this Messiah is, a man who would be anointed, that is, empowered and authorized by God to be prophet, priest, and king, and he would be the one who would change Israel's fortunes. Last week, we looked in the Messianic Psalms that some of the prophecies about his first advent were fulfilled specifically and literally. And those of his death were particularly remarkable. We looked at Psalm 22, do you remember, about crucifixion, even though crucifixion hadn't been invented. It would be like Shakespeare writing about an iPhone. Just it's beyond the experience of King David's writing in Psalm 22. And yet, there it all was. So really quite remarkable. If you missed that, you can catch up with that using the church website. We're actually putting the notes up for this series because I'm referring to a lot more passages than we have time to read. So if you would like to use that as a springboard for study, then please do. So this week we're turning our attention to the Messiah in the prophets. And like last week, what we're going to do is we're going to collate some of the evidence, like in CSI Jerusalem. We're going to piece together some of the bits that we can so that we get a picture of who this Messiah is and what he would do. Now, we've already covered quite a lot of ground with the Messianic Psalms, and we're not going to repeat that, but I want to just sort of point out a few things that hopefully will be thought-provoking for you. Firstly, Micah chapter 5, verse 2, very familiar nativity readings, say this: "But you, Bethlehem, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel." Remember, the Messiah is to be king, "whose origins are from old, from ancient times." You see, this Messiah, he's going to be born, he's going to come out of Bethlehem, and yet he's going to be anointed and eternal. So he's not going to be an ordinary person. There's going to be something special. There's going to be attributes of divinity, of deity, about this anointed one. And he's going to come from Bethlehem. He's going to be anointed with the Spirit of God. Isaiah chapter 11 says, "The Spirit of the Lord will rest upon him." Isaiah 61, very familiar verses. "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me." Remember, Messiah, Christ, anointed one. The Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor, which is why this ties in with the Micah challenge, because this Messiah was going to bring justice and peace because of his rule. He was also going to be born at a specific time. Now, I want to just sort of almost have an aside for a couple of moments before we go back to the other prophecies, because we're going to finish with Isaiah 53. But he was going to be born at a specific time. Daniel chapter 9 says this: "Know and understand this, from the issuing of the decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until the anointed one, the ruler, comes, there will be seven sevens." And I say sevens, I almost sort of do air quotes, sevens. And if you look in Daniel 9, you'll see that it says sevens, because the Hebrew word is Shabbat or Sabbat, which is simply a seven. But we would think of weeks, because there's a Sabbath every week. But actually, this may well refer to seven sets of 7 years, because it actually makes more sense when you look at what Daniel also says, in those chapters, that it's referring to years, not to weeks. So they're weeks of years, like we would say a month of Sundays. That kind of thing. So there will be seven sevens and 62 sevens. It will be rebuilt with streets and a trench, but in times of trouble. After the 62 sevens, the anointed one will be cut off and have nothing. The people of the ruler who will come will destroy the city and the sanctuary. The end will come like a flood. War will continue until the end, and desolations have been decreed. So what we've got is this: although some of the hazing is slightly dated and a little bit contested or disputed, what we can do is we can use this as a general rule of thumb. Some people will bicker a year this way, a year that way, or 2 years this way, or 2 years that way, but bear with me and see how this pans out, and I think you'll find it interesting and remarkable. So the Hebrew word for sevens, we're talking about 7 weeks, begin with the decree to restore Jerusalem. That was verse 25, Daniel 9, 25. The decree to restore Jerusalem, we actually know, was decreed by King Artaxerxes in 445 BC. Okay, now some of you that are good at maths, try and stay with me. If not, for the rest of us, I've done the sums already, so it'll be okay. 445 BC. So after seven sevens, that's 49 years, that would take us through the decree to the arrival of Nehemiah and the covenant renewal at Jerusalem at about 396 BC. So that actually fits. Good. So far, so good. So that's a prediction of 49 years. You know, maybe you could cast your mind forward, but there'd be a bit of a guess. I mean, I don't know that any of us would want to say what was happening in Jerusalem in 49 years, other than that unless the Lord comes again, there'll still be trouble. You know, but that's quite a prediction. Then there's 62 sevens, and that's 434 years. That's why I had to write this down. 434 years, which would be from 396 BC to 32 AD. Okay? Now, this is where it's interesting, because what does it say will happen? Well, it says during that period of time, the temple will be rebuilt. That's the second temple, which was rededicated. But by 32 AD, it says, after 62 sevens, the anointed one will be cut off. And using sort of rough timings, that's AD 32. Can you think of anything that happened around that time where there was an anointed one that was cut off? Does that ring any bells? Isn't this remarkable? This is absolutely incredible. So it's from the dedication of the second temple to the crucifixion of Jesus. And then, of course, there's this other set of 7 years, which many Bible scholars still believe is unfulfilled, but relate to the people of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. But that really is beyond the scope of our time and study this morning. But something to think about, something to look at. Daniel, we usually go up to the lion's den and go, well, that was a nice read of Daniel, and then we leave the dreams and visions behind. But actually, there's some good stuff in there. And if you just get a good commentary to pace you through some of those things, you think, well, now, isn't that interesting? Because, of course, remember, these things are written by Daniel. He was the one who, at the beginning of Daniel, was taken as an exile to Babylon, to the sort of Hogwarts, you know, where the Chaldeans, the Magi, the wise men, the astrologers, all did their training. That's what they did. And of course, his career path was he interpreted successfully the dreams of Nebuchadnezzar. You remember the big statue dream and all of that. And then he was faithful to God during the reigns of Belshazzar and Darius the Mede. And he became one of the most prominent advisors in Babylon. Remember, Babylon is where Hogwarts of the ancient world was, where they were training the Magi, where they were training the wise men and the astrologers. And of course, that's where the three, allegedly, wise men came from, or at least the wise men bringing three gifts. They came from the east, didn't they? They were wise men and astrologers who said, we saw the star. But they also had this prophecy of Daniel saying, listen up, around this time, Messiah is going to come after the dedication of the temple and before he's cut off in, well, of course, they wouldn't have understood it as AD 32 because, you know, time hadn't changed from BC to AD. But they were understanding the times and the seasons because Genesis 1 says that the stars and planets were given to us for signs and for seasons. And they were stargazers. Do you find that interesting or is it just me? I think it's fascinating. Now, what's interesting is that they knew the timing of the Messiah, this new king of Israel, but they didn't know the prophecy of Micah that said where he would be born. So they understandably thought, well, the king is going to be born in Jerusalem because that's where the temple is, that's where the palace is, it's the capital city. So that's where you'd go. So they go along to the current king, Herod, and say, oh, we've just come and worship the new king, that, you know, from Daniel and from the stars that we know should be born around about now. Of course, Herod's not terribly pleased about that, and we know that it goes on from there. And that's where the problem started, because Herod's advisors knew that Micah said, you, Bethlehem, though you're the smallest of the clans, from you the ruler will come. Isn't that fascinating? This is all from the prophets that is telling us about this Messiah. The prophets also tell us some other things, that he would be born of a virgin. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you this sign. The virgin will be with child and give birth to a son and call him Emmanuel, which again means God with us. Other things that are prophesied that we'll just go through, I'll name them, but there are, if you look at my notes, you can see, as these notes go up on the internet, you'll be able to look through the passages and go, well, it really does say that. How remarkable. What a fantastic book this Bible is. But it prophesies the slaughter of the children, which was Herod's reaction. He said, I don't want this new king. Kill every male child under 2 years. There was the flight to Egypt, where they ran for their lives and escaped after they'd received the gifts from the wise men. The way was going to be prepared. There was going to be a forerunner who was John the Baptist. It even tells us in Isaiah 35 that Jesus would have not just a preaching and teaching ministry, but he would have a healing ministry. He would open blind eyes and strengthen lame legs. It tells about how he would have a ministry in Galilee. And again, you would tend to keep your ministry to the southern kingdom, where Jerusalem was. But in fact, he went to the north as well, because his ministry was bigger than territories and people groups. And we now know that in fact that good news of peace to all mankind is for the whole world rather than even just one country. It also talks about in Isaiah 9 that he would have God's own names applied to him. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be upon his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. So we see that this Messiah is bigger, actually, than any of the thoughts that could have been thought about him. He's so much more than all these things. He would come and he would have a ministry to heal up the brokenhearted. And then looking towards the end of his ministry, the triumphal entry, him coming into Jerusalem on the colt of a donkey, was in Zechariah 9. The fact that he wouldn't be believed, Isaiah 53. Who has believed our report? Who's believed? I mean, you would think that if this king came, everyone would be hanging on every word and believe what he said. But at the end, it says he was despised and rejected. He was betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. Zechariah 11 actually says that. We saw in the Messianic Psalms that he would be betrayed by a friend. And now we even find out how much for. That is detail. That he would be silent to his accusations, like a sheep before its shearers is silent. So he opened up not his mouth. That he would be silent. That he would be spat on and struck. Isaiah 50, where it even actually says that they would tear chunks out of his beard and be really horrible. That he would be hated without reason. And that he would actually be crucified alongside malefactors or the thieves on the cross. He poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors. Isn't that remarkable? I just think it's incredible. That his side would be pierced. They will look on me, the one they have pierced, it says in Zechariah 12. They didn't pierce the sides of the thieves. They broke their legs because they were still alive. But because Jesus had already committed his spirit to his Father and had given up the ghost, it says, that he had released his spirit, that he was already dead, so they didn't need to break his legs. Psalms, we saw last week, said, none of my bones they have broken. And now we find that instead his side is pierced. He's buried with the rich. It says he was assigned a grave with the wicked and the rich in his death. And you remember Joseph of Arimathea said he can use my tomb. So he went in a rich man's tomb and yet he died. He was numbered alongside the transgressors. All these things in prophecy tell us that God knows what he's doing. When he makes a promise, he can fulfill it. Literally and specifically, he knows what he's doing. He knows the end from the beginning. And yet there's one question that comes most strongly from Isaiah 53, the passage that Bev read to us. There's one question that we need to ask. If God can orchestrate stars and nations and rulers, if he can orchestrate all these things so that children are crying out in praise, there's a donkey that's available, all these things, God can do that. For me, I have to ask the question, why? Why would all those details be in place? The week after, because it's Nativity next week. The week after, we're going to think about the pedigree of the Messiah and the fact that only one person in all of sort of history could fulfill all these criteria, and that person is Jesus. But why did Jesus come? Isaiah 53, the passage that Bev read to us, tells us. And this is what all of it is about. Revelation 19, the angel says the spirit of prophecy, the purpose of prophecy is Jesus. So what is it? Isaiah 53 says this: "He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering. Like one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he took up our infirmities and carried our sorrows. Yet we esteemed him stricken by God, smitten by him and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was bruised for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was upon him, and by his wounds we are healed." So why did this Messiah come? Why all this detail to be fulfilled? I'll tell you why. Because he came to be a sacrifice. His first advent, his first coming, was to come and make available salvation, forgiveness, eternal life, to open up the way that everyone could have peace with God, could know God as their Father. Every single one. That is incredible. Romans chapter 5 says this: "You see, at just the right time, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were still sinners, Christ died for us." What's the purpose of all these prophecies being fulfilled? The purpose of Messiah coming that first time as a baby, as this suffering servant. What was the reason? I think 1 Peter 3 sums it up. "For Christ died for sins once for all, the righteous for the unrighteous, to bring you to God." To bring you to God. That's why he came. That each of us might know God. And the Bible is full of history and fulfilled prophecy that says he means it. He wants to bring you to God. Jesus came and he's put away sin. He's got rid of the barrier that was between you and God. And now it's time to walk through that open way, that open door, and be brought to God, to know him and to know his love and forgiveness. So in this way, we can remind ourselves of the core of our call to worship this morning, that he would be called Emmanuel, which means God with us, and his name would be Jesus, which means he would save his people from their